Osho, From Misery to Enlightenment, Answers to the Seekers of the Path, given in Rajneeshpuram, Oregon, USA. Discourse number 9.
Bhagwan, you were more awake as an infant than I am now. How did this courage and awareness happen?
It is very simple. And yet not so easy to explain to you. The reason is that it relates with your past life. Now, as far as I am concerned, it is reality. As far as you are concerned, it can only be a hypothesis. I am not saying to you to believe in it. That is my most fundamental approach. Never to say to anybody to believe in anything. I am simply explaining how it happened to me. You can find out ways to experiment with the hypothesis. Perhaps it may happen to you too. And it is never late. The moment the child is born, you think that is the beginning of his life. It is not true. The moment an old man dies, you think it is the end of his life. It is not. Life is far bigger than birth and death. Birth and death are not two ends of life. Many births and many deaths happen within life. Life itself has no beginning, no end. Life and eternity are equivalent. And you can understand it very easily how life can turn into death. Even to conceive that is impossible. There are few inconceivables in the world. One of them is, you cannot conceive life turning into death. At what point it is no more life and it becomes death? where you will demark the line. Neither you can demark the line about birth. When the life begins, when the child is born, or when the child is conceived, but even before conception, the mother's egg was alive, the father's gene was alive. They were not dead, because the meeting of two dead things cannot create life. They were both alive. And they merged into one and created a life which, rightly understood, is neither just man's nor just woman's. A man has a woman hidden him. The woman has a man hidden in her. It is bound to be so, because they are contributions of one man, one woman, the father, the mother, and they both contributed 50% to your being. If you are man, that simply means that the man's side is above and the woman's side is below. If you are a woman, the female side is above and the male side is below. And this you can watch in your own life. There are moments when a man feels very feminine, very vulnerable, very loving, caring. In fact, he can be more feminine than a woman, because the woman's femininity is an everyday affair. She takes it for granted, and she has used it her whole life. It is nothing special. But for a man, the moment of feminineness happening, there are moments of tenderness, everybody knows. And you are surprised also that such a tenderness and in you, that tenderness is fresh. The woman's tenderness is getting stale, routine. The same happens to the woman. There are moments when she feels the man coming up from deeper sources of her unconscious. She can show so much strength, courage, risk, that even a man may feel inferior. For the simple reason that man's manliness is there, and he has been using it every day. It is not fresh. It is not so alive. That's why when a woman becomes angry, she is more ferocious than men. In animals it has been washed. When the female becomes ferocious only in certain moments when her children are attacked. They may be attacked even by the father himself, because the institution of father is a human institution. It does not exist in animals. The children will never know who is their father. The father will never know that he has produced children. But the mother is not a human invention. The mother is something in the nature itself. That's why you cannot put father higher than mother. Perhaps except in Germany. Those fools go on calling their motherland fatherland. The whole world calls their country their motherland. But German fools have some speciality. It doesn't look right either, fatherland. The earth is feminine. The sky is masculine. Because the earth gives birth to everything. To animals, to insects, to birds, to trees, to men. The earth can be called mother. You will be surprised to find the similarity between these birds. The English word matter and the English word mother are both derivations of a Sanskrit root, matra. Matra means mother, and matra means matter, quantity. From matra are derived both matter and mother. The earth is the most tangible material phenomena. You cannot call it father. It has no relationship with it. But you can't argue with Germans either. when I hear their language, I cannot help to think that if in hell any language is spoken, it must be German. The way it hits you. It has no roundness anywhere. Everywhere knives coming out of the language from each word. I cannot conceive how people can love in German language. It will look like a fight. Perhaps it is. There are languages in which even if you fight, it will look like you are having a sweet conversation. The men or the women are not really two separate entities. But the personality of man needs supporting qualities of the woman. If those supporting qualities are not there, the man will fall apart. And the same will happen to the woman. She cannot exist only on female qualities. She needs male supporting qualities. So each human being is a composite whole of two polarities which appear opposed to each other but are not really opposed. They are basically absolutely essential components of each other. At what time the child is born? Science has not been able to decide. There is no way to decide. Because in the mother's womb, the eggs that she is carrying, she has been carrying from her birth. By the way, just don't let me drift. It has been found, and that seems to be the only explanation, that Jesus can be saved by being a bastard. It has been found that few girls are born with a twin inside their womb. In fact, there were going to be two girls, but somehow other girl, which was going to be the twin, never grew up and became part of the girl that was born. She can carry that twin in her womb. That twin is alive. And at the right time, without any sexual interaction with man, she will give birth to a child. Now, this is scientifically proved a fact. In few animals, it has been found again and again. And just the other day, Vivek has brought one information of a similar case. I have at least for 20 years been thinking about it, because I came to know 20 years before about a case, similar case, that a girl gave birth to a dead child. And even doctors confirmed that the girl was absolutely innocent. I had been there in the medical college to see the whole thing, because it was a difficult problem in India. It is not so difficult in the West. If it is proved that the girl had some sexual relationship with a man, then there is no possibility. Her whole life is ruined. She will never be married. And she will be condemned everywhere. It is better to die than to live for her. But because all the doctors were absolutely certain that this dead child is not conceived by her, she has carried the small miniature child in her body since her very birth. And when she became sexually mature, the child started growing. Exactly, because for the child it makes no difference. For the child it is the same whether it is conceived sexually by a new man, but in fact really he is carrying the daughter's father's gene. And mother's cell, the child that is born to the girl is not her child but her brother. It was good that he was born dead. It would have been good if Jesus also was born dead. But unfortunately, he was born alive. This is the only scientific way to save the poor fellow from being a bastard. Otherwise, no Holy Ghost can help. All that is nonsense. One thing has to be accepted, that the half of your being is alive even before you are born in your mother's womb. and half of you is to be contributed by your father. That too has to be contributed alive. When the genes leave your father's body, they are alive. But they don't have a long life. They have only 2 hours life. Within 2 hours, they have to meet the mother's egg. If within 2 hours they don't meet, they start bumming around here and there. It is absolutely certain that each gene must have its own characteristic personality. Few are lazy fellows. When others are running towards the egg, they are just taking a morning walk. This way they are never going to reach. But what they can do? These characteristics come from the birth. They cannot run. They will rather prefer to die. And they are not even aware what is going to happen. But few guys are just Olympic racers. They immediately start running fast, and there is great competition, because it is not a question of few hundred cells running towards the mother's single egg, because the mother's womb, her reservoir of eggs, which is limited, releases only one egg every month. That's why she has the monthly course. Every month one egg is released. So only one fellow out of this whole mob, which consists of millions of living cells. It is really a great philosophical problem. It is nothing just biology, because the problem is that out of so many millions of people, only one person will be born. And who were those other millions which could not get into the mother's egg? This has been used as one of the arguments in India by Hindu scholars, pandits, Shankaracharyas, against birth control. India is clever about argumentation. Pope goes on talking against birth control but has not produced a single argument. At least the Indian counterpart has produced few very valid looking arguments. One of their arguments is that at what point to stop producing children? 2 children? 3 children? They say Rabindranath was the 13th child of their parents. If birth control was practiced, there would have been no Rabindranath Tagore. The argument seems to be valid, because birth control means a stop at 2 children. At the most 3, don't take any chance, one may die or something may happen. You can reproduce 2 children to replace you and your wife, so no population increase happens. But Rabindranath was the 13th child of their parents. If they have it stopped even at 1 dozen, then to Rabindranath, had missed the train. Now, how many Rabindranaths are missing trains? I was talking to one of the Shankaracharyas, I said, perfectly right. For argument's sake, I accept that this is true. We would have missed one Rabindranath Tagore. I am willing, if the whole country can live peacefully, can have enough food, can have enough clothes, can have all basic needs fulfilled, I think it is worth. I am ready to lose one Rabindranath Tagore. There is nothing much. You have to see the balance. Millions of people dying and starving. Just to produce one Rabindranath Tagore? So you mean every parent has to go up to 13th? But what about the 14th? What about the 15th? And forget about these small numbers. In each love making, a man releases millions of genes. And all times when a man makes love, a child is not conceived. You will be surprised to know that by the age a man becomes sexually mature, that is 14, from 14, if he continues according to my calculations up to the age 42, which I feel is a new maturity. Just as sex matures at 14, spirituality starts growing at 42. There is a 7-year cycle. First 7 years, there is no question of sex. The child is innocent. He may be playing sexual games, but those are unconscious, and he has no idea that those games are sexual. And he is not playing them for sexuality. He is being prepared by biology, because later on he has to play all these games. Some rehearsal is needed. I have been telling you that 2 games children play, one I completely forgot that day. One is hide and seek all around the earth, and second is doctor and patient. That is strange. And the patient is always the girl. And the doctor is always the boy. I have inquired that does it happen sometimes the opposite way, that the girl is the doctor and the boy is the patient? No. The girl is not interested at all in such curiosities. The woman is not so much attracted by a man's body. She is attracted more by a man's charisma, impressiveness, personality, the way he walks, the way he talks. She is not much interested in his physical beauty. Something which is not tangible she is interested in. But the woman has that instinct to find what is attractive in the man. Many times a man will be surprised that I don't see anything attractive in this man. And it happens that that man is almost a hero amongst women. Many women get attracted to that man. They see something, they feel something which no other man will ever be able to see in that man. But their attraction is not physical. Something more subtle, more of the vibes of the energy, more on the esoteric side. For example, Chetana has a boyfriend, Milarepa. Milarepa the Great. Milarepa is just a lady killer. Continuously killing ladies here and there and everywhere. And I can't even recognize him. Vivek goes on so me. Chetana has been showing me that this is Milarepa. And next time again I'll Milarepa. He's such a lady killer. I want him to see and look better at him. What is the matter? But I simply go on forgetting his face. Just yesterday Vivek has told me that he was standing with the drum just in front of you. With a drum. In front of me. I saw the drum. With Milarepa. And the drum was good. And the drumming was good. Everything was good. But I simply did not look at the man who is drumming it. He is a great drummer. I again missed. And I go on asking Chetna about Milarepa. And she has described me everything about Milarepa. In fact, Milarepa is the only person about whom I know any kind of information. And every day I try to find out that one day I am going to figure out that this is Milarepa. But yesterday I lost hope. He was standing in front of me drumming. What more the poor fellow can do? Just I'm blind. And he's certainly a personality like Lord Byron. That even though he goes on with so many ladies, no lady feels offended. They all accept that he is such a person that you cannot possess him. From the very beginning, there are individuals. And millions of people in each lovemaking simply disappear. We will never know how many Nobel Prize winners were there. How many presidents, prime ministers, all kinds of people must have been there. So this is my calculation. From 14th year to 42, if a man goes absolutely normally about his love making, he will release almost the equal amount of gens as is the whole population of the earth. A single man. Can populate the whole earth, overpopulate, it is already overpopulated. And this can be done even by a single Milarepa. Nobody else is needed. And all these people will be unique. Individuals, not having anything in common except their humanness. No, life does not start there either. Life starts farther back, but to you that is only a hypothesis. To me it is my experience. Life begins at the point of your past life's death. When you die, on the one side one chapter of life is closed, which people think was your whole life. It was only a chapter in a book which has infinite chapters. One chapter closes, but the book is not closed. just move the page and another chapter begins. The person dying starts visualizing his next life. First, this is a known fact because it happens before the chapter closes. Once in a while, a person comes back from the very last point. For example, drowning, and he is somehow saved, almost in a coma. His water has to be taken out and artificial breathing has to be given. And somehow he is saved. He was just on the verge of closing the chapter. These people have reported interesting facts. One is that at the last moment, when they felt that they are dying, that it is finished, their whole past life went so fast before them in a flash from the birth to this moment. Within a split second, they saw everything that had happened to them, that they had remembered, and also that which they have never remembered, many things which they had not even taken note of, and they were not aware that they are part of their memory. The whole film of memory goes so quick in a flash, and it has to be in a split second, because the man is dying, there is no time. 3 hours to save, see the whole movie. And even if you see the whole movie, you cannot relate the whole story of a man's life with his small details. Insignificant. But everything moves before him. That is a certain, very significant phenomenon. Before ending the chapter, he recollects all his experiences, unfulfilled desires, expectations, disappointments, frustrations, sufferings, joys, everything. Buddha has a word for it. He calls it tanha. Literally, it means desire. But metaphorically, it means the whole life of desire. All these things happened, frustrations, fulfillments, disappointments, successes, failures, but all this happened within a certain area you can call desire. He has to see the whole before he moves further. just to recollect it. Because the body is going, this mind is not going to be with him, this brain is not going to be with him, but the desires released from this mind will cling to his soul. And this desire will decide his future life. Whatever has remained unfulfilled, he will move towards that target. Your life begins far back, before your birth, before your impregnation, further back in your past life's end. That end is the beginning of this life. One chapter closes, another chapter opens. Now, how this new life will be is 99% determined by the last moment of your death. What you collected, what you have brought with you like a seed, that seed will become a tree, bring fruits, bring flowers, or whatever happens to it. You cannot read it in the seed, but the seed has the whole blueprint. There is a possibility one day the science may be able to read in the seed the whole program, that what kind of branches this tree is going to have, how long this tree is going to live, what is going to happen to this tree. Because the blueprint is there, just we don't know the language. Everything that is going to happen is already potentially present. So what you do at the moment of your death determines how your birth is going to be. Most of the people die clinging. They don't want to die. And one can understand why they don't want to die. Only at the moment of death they recognize the fact that they have not lived. Life has simply passed as if a dream, and death has come. Now there is no more time to live. Death is knocking on the door. And when there was time to live, you were doing 1001 foolish things, wasting your time. Rather than living it, I have asked people playing cards, playing chess, what are you doing? They say, killing time. From my very childhood, I have been against this expression, killing time. My grandfather was a a great chess player. And I will ask him that you are getting old and still killing time. Can't you see that really time is killing you? And you go on saying that you are killing time. You don't know even what time is. You don't know where it is. Just catch hold of it and show me. And all these expressions that time is fleeting and passing and going are just a kind of consolation. It is really you who are passing, going down the drain every moment, and you go on thinking that it is time that is passing, as if you are going to stay and time is going to pass. Time is where it is. It is not passing. The watches and the clocks are man's creation to measure the passing time, which is not passing at all. Only in one mad man's house I saw the right kind of clock. I was just traveling and I missed a train, and to catch the same train I rushed to pick up a taxi and to go to the other station, which was possible because the train goes on a longer route, 120 miles, and the taxi can reach within 60 miles the road goes. So I rushed to the taxi stand, and there I found one of my school days friends. We studied in the high school together. So he was very happy. He said, "Don't be worried. I will put you in that train. If not in the next station, then the next, or the next, or I will take you to the whole journey. You don't be worried. But you have to come to my house." I said, "This is not time for me to waste. I have to pick up the train." He said, "You have to come. I have been waiting for you for years. And I have been hearing about you and reading about you and newspapers and everything. And I was waiting someday you will come here too. And today you have come and you are in such a hurry. You can't even come to my house. Just see in what misery I have fallen." I said, "What has happened?" He said, "You just come. There was no way." And he was the only taxi owner there. There was no other taxi. It was a small town. So I said, "There is no way either. So I will come. But remember that I have to catch the train whatsoever happens, wherever you catch it. But I have to catch the train." That he promised. He took me his home. And there I could see, even from the window was open, the wife was mad. She was standing, holding the steel rods which were fixed on the window to prevent her coming out, and the way her hairs were falling and the way she looked, he said, "This is my wife." I said, "Good." "But what can I do? I'm in a hurry. Do you want me to treat your wife or something?" "No," he said, "no, I don't want you to treat her. I just want to see and suggest me what can I do." I said, "Okay." I went in. There I saw a clock in my whole life, the right clock that woman has done. It had only the hour hand. You could not figure it out, what is the time. I asked the man that, "What is the point of keeping this clock here with 1 hour hand?" He said, "This woman has her ideas. I have managed that clock to be fixed dozens of times, but always she removed the second hand. So I said, how do you make time?" He showed me another watch. In his pocket, he had a pocket watch which has only a second hand. He said, "I keep both watches before me and figure out what is the time." I said, "Your wife is mad, but you are also mad. This is something. Really, you are creative. In one term, a scientist, and you are driving a taxi. This is... I could not have imagined that two clocks will do the work." And he said, "They do perfectly well, because she is not going to listen." So I had to manage myself. That is the only clock that was right, because you could not figure out time. In Punjab, in India, if you are traveling in Punjab, you can ask Neelam. Never ask anybody what is the time. Because if it happens to be 12, you will be beaten. And if you can escape alive, that is just a miracle. Because for a very philosophical reason, but when philosophy comes in the hands of fools, this is what happens. Nanak has said, the founder of Sikhism, that the moment of samadhi is just like two hands of the clock meeting on 12, where there are no more two. He was just taking an example that in the moment of samadhi, the two-ness of your being dissolves and you arrive into oneness. The same happens in death too. He explained later on that same happens in death. Again, the two hands which have been separately moving come together and stop, become one. You become one with existence. So in Punjab, 12 o'clock has become the symbol of death. So if you ask any Sardarji what is the time, if it happens to be 12, he will simply start beating you. Because that means you are teasing him and you are cursing him with death. Somebody with a long face, miserable, in anguish, in Punjab they will say, on his face, it is 12 o'clock. I have seen Sardars changing their watch quickly. When it comes to 12, they will move 5 minutes ahead quickly. They won't keep it on 12. It hurts. Their own watch playing tricks on them. 12 reminds them only of misery, sadness, death. They have completely forgotten about samadhi, for which Nanak was really trying to explain them. When a person dies, when it is 12 o'clock for him, he clings with the life. His whole life he has been thinking time is passing. Now he feels he is going. Nothing is passing, he has passed. No clinging can help. He becomes so miserable, and the misery becomes so unbearable that most of the people fall into a kind of unconscious state, a coma, before they die. So they miss to recover their whole life. If death is without any clinging, if there is no desire to remain even for a single moment more alive, you will die consciously, because there is no need for nature to make you unconscious or force you into a coma. You will die alert, and you will recollect the whole past, and you will be able to see that whatever you have been doing was simply stupid. Desires have been fulfilled. What have you gained? Desires have remained unfulfilled. You have suffered. But what have you gained when they are fulfilled? It is a strange game in which you are always losing Whether you win or lose makes no difference. Your pleasures were nothing. Just signatures made on water. And your pain was engraved on granite. And you suffered all that pain for these signatures on water. You suffered your whole life for small joys which don't appear more than toys at this stage, from this height, from this point. You can see the whole valley of your life. Successes were also failures. Failures, of course, were failures. Pleasures were nothing but incentives to pain. All your euphoria was just the function of your dream faculty. You are going with empty hands. This whole life has been just a vicious circle. You went on moving into the same circle round and round and round. And you have not arrived anywhere, because moving in a circle, how you can arrive anywhere? The center always remained at the same distance wherever you were on the circle. Success came, failure came, pleasure came, pain came, and there was misery and there was joy. Everything went on happening on the circle, but the center of your being remained always on the equidistance from every place. It was difficult to see while you were in the circle. You were too much involved in it, too much part of it. But now suddenly all has dropped out of your hands. You are standing empty. Khalil Gibran, in his masterpiece, The Prophet, has one sentence: Al-Mustafa, the Prophet, comes running to the people who are working in the farms and says to them that my ship has arrived. My time has come to go. I have come here just to have a glance backwards to all that has happened and to all that has not happened. Before I go aboard the ship, a great longing just to see what was my life here. The sentence that I was going to remind you is, he says, I am just like a river which is going to fall into the ocean, waits for a moment to look back. The whole terrain that she has passed, the jungles, the mountains, the people. It has been a rich life of thousands of miles, and now in a single moment all is going to dissolve. So just like a river on the brink of falling into the ocean looks back, I want to look back. But this looking back is possible only if you are not clinging to the past. Otherwise you are so afraid to lose it that you don't have time to observe, to see, and time is just a split second. If a man dies fully alert, seeing the whole terrain that he has passed and seeing the whole stupidity of it, he is born with a sharpness, with an intelligence, with a courage. Automatically, it is not something to do about. You ask me that you were sharp, courageous, intelligent, even as an infant. I am not that much courageous even now. The reason is that I died in my past life in a different way than you died. That makes the great difference, because the way you die, the same way you are born. Your death is one side of the coin, your birth is another side of the same coin. If on the other side there was confusion, misery, anguish, clinging, desire, then on this side of the coin you can't expect sharpness, intelligence, courage, clarity, awareness. That will be absolutely unwarranted. You cannot expect that. That's why I said it is very simple but difficult to explain to you, because I have not done anything in this life to be courageous or to be sharp and intelligent from the very beginning. And I have never thought about it as courage or sharpness or intelligence. It was only later on, slowly I became that how much stupid people are. It was only a later reflection. Otherwise I was not aware that I am courageous. I was thinking everybody must be the same. Only later on it became clear to me that it is not, everybody is not the same. This was one of my joys in my childhood, to go as high a hill by the side of the river and jump. And many neighborhood boys will come with me and they will try, but they will just go to the very brink and come back seeing the height, and they will say that suddenly something happens. I used to show them again and again that if I can jump, I don't have a steel body. And if I go on managing, surviving, why can't you? They said, we try our hard. And they really tried. There was one Brahmin boy just living by my side who was very much humiliated by this because he could not jump. So he must have asked his father what to do, because it is very humiliating. He goes on top hills and jumps from there. And we just watch, and we can see that if he can jump, we can jump. There is no problem in it. If the height cannot kill him, why it should kill us? But just when we go gathering courage, making all kinds of effort, and we rush, and then suddenly there comes the break. From where it comes, we don't know, but just a break, something from our inside says no. These rocks and this river, if you fall on some rock or, and the river is deep, and when you fall from a height, first you go to the very bottom of the river and then you come up, you cannot do anything else. The father said, this is not good, because the father was a very good wrestler, one of the champions in the district. And he used to run a gymnasium and teach other peoples how to fight Indian freestyle wrestling. That is more human and more skillful and more artful than boxing. Boxing seems to be absolutely animal type of behavior. In Indian wrestling, you don't hurt the other person. A very good wrestler simply touches the other person and the other person is flat. It is an art, a craft. And the body has been learned point by point. However strong the person is, if at a perfect angle behind the knee you just hit him this much, just this much, the man will fall. However strong he is, that doesn't matter. Just you have to know the right point where to hit with your hand. Your hand may be just a delicate hand, no need for it to be a hammer. The man will fall. They know all kinds of strategies. There are thousands. And it is an art, certainly an art. Nobody is hurt. There is no desire to hurt anybody. And the game is worth seeing. Almost takes your breath away, because it happens so quickly. A master wrestler, and this man was a master wrestler, he was not very giant-like, and that was one of his reasons of becoming famous. He was a middle size height, not a heavyweight champion, very thin. And in fact, whenever he was challenged, or he challenged somebody, the other wrestlers used to laugh that this man, he may get killed. His bones may have fractures. This man is going to fight. The other man is so strong, he will just take him up in both his hands and throw him down. And that was his whole art, because everybody was ready to fight with him, thinking that he is going to be victorious. And what he did do on the field, on the Indian wrestling field, it is not like the boxing type of thing. Very thin powdered earth, thick, 6 inches thick powdered earth is spread on a big piece of ground. So if they fall, nobody is hurt. It is far more softer than velvet. It is grounded so thin, and they find the best kind of soil for it. What he used to do first, the other wrestler will stand there, of course, perfectly certain that he is going to win. And this poor fellow, who looked poor, but always proved to be the winner, will go round, in a round people stand to see, and in a round is the ground. He will go around dancing backwards, and that dance was worth seeing. He won't look back, he will look ahead and dance backwards, and still he will go exactly in the round. And after his dance was over, and the man was taken a bit aback that what he is doing, and the dance was so beautiful, so graceful. And after the dance, he will immediately jump over the fellow, as if a tiger or a lion jumps over the game. And he was so lightweight, almost could fly in the air. And the man was simply taken by surprise. What is happening? First his dance was strange. No wrestler I have seen dancing that way. And after the dance, he will simply jump on the fellow. And he had such small strategies that within seconds, people were not able to figure it out what he did, and how the man is flat on the ground and he is sitting on his chest. if the child had belonged to somebody else, he would have told him not to go there at all. But this man was not that type. He said, if he can jump and you cannot jump, that is disgrace to me. I will come with you. I will stand there. And you don't be worried. When he jumps, you jump. I had no idea that his father is there. When I went there, I saw the father, the son, and then few other boys had gathered to see. I had a look and I figured it out what is the matter. I said to the boy that today you need not bother. Let your father jump. He is a great wrestler and there will be no problem for him. The father looked at me because he had come just to encourage the boy that he does not become a coward. He said, so I have to jump? I said, yes. You can have your dance. You can do anything that you want. Get ready. He looked down. He said, I am a wrestler. These rocks and this river, and you have found some spot. You must be rehearsing here. Anybody else trying to jump is going to break his neck or leg or anything. I said, you had brought your son. He said, I had brought, not knowing what is the situation. I thought when you can jump, he can jump. He is of the same age. But here, seeing the situation, I was worried and thinking, if you don't turn up today, it will be a great thing because my boy is not going to survive. But you are clever. You simply dropped my boy out. You caught hold of me. I will try. And the same thing happened. Even that wrestler who was more courageous and in every way he has been fighting his whole life, but coming on the brink, the sudden break, because the slope was such, at least 50 feet down, and the river was 30 feet deep, and the rocks were such that it was beyond your control where you will hit, what will hit you. And standing on the top of the hill, the wind was so strong that you can be simply killed. He just stopped there and he said, forgive me. And he told his son that, son, come home. This is not our business. Let him do. Perhaps he knows something. That day I strangely felt about myself that why that break does not come to me. And I have tried on very strange places. The railway bridge was the highest on the river. Naturally, because in the rains the river swells up so big that the bridge has always to remain above. So it is made at the highest point, and there was always two guards moving on the bridge for two reasons. One, that nobody commits suicide, because that was the place for people to commit suicide. Just falling from there into the river was enough. You never reached the river alive. You lost your breath somewhere in the middle. It was high enough, and just to see downwards was enough to give you a nauseous feeling. And secondly, there was fear of revolutionaries who were putting bombs, throwing away bridges, burning trains. And to cut a bridge was very significant for revolutionaries, because those bridges were joining two parts of the province. If the bridge is broken, then the army cannot pass. Then they can do something in the other part where army headquarters are not. So these guards were 24 hours there. But they accepted me. I explained to them that neither I want to commit suicide, nor I have come to explode your bridge. In fact, I want the bridge to be guarded carefully, because this is my place. If this bridge is gone, then my highest point of jumping is gone. They said, "This is your practice?" I said, "This is my practice, and you can see. And once you have seen, you will be convinced that I have no other desire." They said, "Okay, we can see." I jumped, they could not believe. When I came back, I asked them, "Would you like to try?" They said, "No, but for you, it is always free. You can come at any time. We have seen you going so easily. But we cannot jump. We know people have died from here." That bridge was known as Death Bridge. That was the easiest, cheapest to commit suicide. Even if you purchase poison, some money is wasted. From that bridge it was simply easy. And the river there was the deepest, and it took you away. Nobody will even find your body, because just after a few miles it meets a bigger, huge river, and you are gone forever. Seeing the fear on those two guards' faces, seeing the fear in this wrestler, I simply started wondering, perhaps I missed the brakes. Perhaps they should be there, because they are protective. But as I started growing up, and I have been growing up, I have not been growing older. From my very birth, I have been growing up, growing up, growing up. Never think that I am growing older. Only idiots grow older. Everybody else grows up. As I started growing up, I started becoming aware of my past life, death, and I remembered that how easily I had died. Not only easily, but enthusiastically. My more interest was in knowing the unknown that is ahead than into the known that I have seen. I have never looked back. And this has been my whole life's way, not to look back. There is no point. You can't go back. Why waste time? I'm always looking ahead. Even at the point of death, I was looking ahead. And that's what made me clear why I am missing the breaks. Those breaks are provided by your fear of the unknown. You are clinging to the past and you are afraid to move into the unknown. You are clinging to the known acquaintance. It may be painful. It may be ugly. But at least you know it. You have grown a certain kind of friendship with it. You will be surprised, but this is my experience of thousands of people, that they cling to their misery for the simple reason because they have grown with the misery a certain kind of friendship. They have lived with it so long that now to leave it will be almost like a divorce. And the same is the situation with marriage and divorce. The man thinks at least 12 times in a day about divorce. The woman thinks, but somehow both go on managing living together. For the simple reason that both are afraid of the unknown. This man is bad, okay, who knows about the other man? He may prove worse then. And at least you have become accustomed of this man's badness, unlovingness. And you can tolerate. You have tolerated. You have also become thick-skinned with the new man. One never knows. You will have to start from the very scratch again. So people go on clinging with the known. At the moment of death, you just watch people. Their suffering is not death. Death has no pain in it. It is absolutely painless. It is really pleasant. It is just like a deep sleep. Do you think deep sleep is something painful? But they are not concerned about death and deep sleep and pleasure. They are worried about the noon that is slipping out of their hands. Fear means only one thing: losing the known and entering into the unknown. Courage is just the opposite of fear. Always ready to drop the known, more than willing to drop it. Not even waiting that let it be ripe, and just to jump on something that is new. Its very newness, its very freshness is so alluring. Then there is courage. Courage is not something that you have to exercise and practice and do yogasanas and go to a gymnasium. No, I have seen those courageous people. They are not courageous at all. I had a friend when I was in my matriculation. He was very much interested in wrestling, and he was a good wrestler. And of course he was thought to be very brave and courageous, and he had won the state championship for wrestling. In those days, in our town, there was the high school, but examinations were not held there for the matriculation. For matriculation, we had to go to the district place to give the examinations. So we all went to the district place, which was not far away, 30 miles away. But we had to stay there for 15-20 days, as long as the examination continued. And by chance it happened that he had no place to stay. So I said, you can stay with me. One of my father's friends, who was a kerosene oil dealer, had a beautiful house, and in front of the house a big house which he used for empty kerosene tin cans, just to collect them there. And on the side was his shop. What I had experienced before, many times I had been there and I had stayed in their guest house, that in hot summer in India, when it is too hot, in the day the tin cans expand, and in the night they again come back to their size, so they make much noise. And if there are thousands of tin cans in the house, then you can think what kind of noise they will create. So this wrestler, and we were talking about things, and he said, for some reason we started talking about ghosts, and he said, I don't believe in ghosts. I said, it is not a question of belief. Do you want to see? He said, no, but there is no question of seeing. I don't believe in ghosts. I said, if you don't believe, then don't be afraid. I can manage a meeting this very night. Now he was in a corner. He said, okay, I don't believe that there are ghosts, but I could see on his face that all is wrestling, because you can't wrestle with a ghost. And I said, a simple thing has to be done. You see the house in front? He said, yes. I said, on the second floor there is a beautiful room. You go there, you sleep there tonight, and you will meet, because this house on the ground floor is occupied by ghosts. He said, I don't believe in all nonsense. This is all nonsense. I said, no problem. And if by chance, if you are right, there is no problem. If by chance you prove wrong, I am always here. You can just give me a call from the balcony. He said, there will be no need for calling anybody. He went into the house. The staircase went by the first ground floor where all those tin cans were gathered. He looked at all those tin cans, but he had no idea that what those tin cans can do. He went up. He said, there is nothing, no problem. I left him upstairs, and I told him that I am going out. You please lock it from within, so nobody comes in. So he came back, locked the door, went up. Near about 1 o'clock in the night, it started. Of course, I was fast asleep by that time, thinking that nothing has happened. I waited for 1.5 hours, and then I said, perhaps today the climate is not good, or what is the matter? I went to sleep. But by 1 or 1:30, there was such a crowd that I woke up, what is the matter? I had completely forgotten that I have put that boy there. And that was the matter. The whole crowd was gathered there, and he was standing on the balcony screaming, but could not make any words come out. He became almost like a person who cannot speak. And as he saw me, because all those people were strangers to him, as he saw me, he just showed his hand And I said, what is the matter? Ghost? He said, yes. With his head. He could not say with his mouth. With his head, he said. So I said, why don't you come and open the door? He said. We had to put a ladder to the balcony, but he was so shaky that two persons had to put him on the ladder, and somehow we brought him down. I had to pour cold water on his head. Then he started speaking. He said, my God, if you had said that there are so many ghosts, I would have believed. I thought maybe there is one or two I can manage. But there were so many, and they were going from one can of tin into another, from another into another. They were passing and running all around and making sound. And you told me, come down from the staircase which passes just by the side. I said, now do you know that ghosts exist? He said, not only I know, I will never forget this experience. Is enough for my whole life. I will never say anything against any ghost. Although they did no harm to me, but I have never been shaken so much. I feel as if all my energy is gone and I have become hollow within. I said, don't be worried. By the morning you will be solid again. Just have a good sleep. But he could not sleep the whole night, tossing and turning. And he said, can you hear them? No. I said, even from here? I said, I can hear. But I know those ghosts are very friendly people. And I have been here many times. You are necessarily getting worried. He said, friendly? Ghosts? And friendly? Only you can sleep here. I'm going. I will sleep on the railway station. And in the morning I will find some other house. Because even in this house I can hear that sound. Neither I can study, nor I can give the examination if these sounds continue. And actually that's what happened. He went in the middle of the night to the railway station. I don't know what he did, where he slept on the railway station. But in the morning he was not in the examination hall. I inquired, I phoned his family. They said, yes, he has come back by the night train. He says, there are so many ghosts. This year is gone. This year I cannot sit in the examination in that city. Next time I will choose another center, another district place, but not in that town. And he is so much afraid. What really has happened? I said, nothing has happened. And when I come, I will explain the whole thing. But the ear is gone. And he is responsible because he insisted that I don't believe in ghosts. I said, I know their place. So I showed him the place. Their family is still angry with me. Because that man never passed matriculation again. Still he is non-matriculate. He tried 11 times. But the fear went so deep in him that the examination time and he will start feeling nervous. The whole experience of that night will become again alive. He will start reliving it. After 11 years, even the family said, don't unnecessarily harass yourself. Forget about it. It is your doing. Why you insisted with that person that there are no ghosts? You know that he is clever enough to manage, and he must have managed. We can't see how he managed, but he must have managed. I explained to them that there was nothing managed, it was just tense, empty, and they shrink in the night when it gets cold, and they make noise, and because they are piled on top of each other, so it seems as if something is going from one into another, passing, roaming around, but no explanation could help. That shock really went deep into his heart. The fear of death is certainly the greatest fear and the most destructive of your courage. So I can suggest only one thing. Now you cannot go back to your past death. But you can start doing one thing. Always be ready to move from the known to the unknown. Anything. Any experience. It is better, even if the unknown proves worse than the known. That is not the point. Just your change from the known to the unknown, your readiness to move from the known to the unknown is what matters, is immensely valuable. And in all kinds of experiences, go on doing that. That will prepare you for death, because when death comes, you cannot suddenly decide that I choose death and leave life. These decisions are not made suddenly. You have to go inch by inch preparing, living moment to moment. And as you grow more familiar with the beauty of the unknown, you start creating a new quality in you. That is there, just it has never been used. Before death comes, go on moving from the known to the unknown. Always remember that the new is better than the old. They say all old is not gold. I say even if all old is gold, forget about it. Choose the new. Gold or no gold, doesn't matter. What matters is your choice. Your choice to learn, your choice to experience, your choice to go into the dark. Slowly, slowly, your courage will start functioning. And sharpness of intelligence is not something separate from courage. It is almost one organic whole. With fear there is cowardliness, and there is bound to be retardedness of the mind, mediocrity. They are one part. They all are together. They support each other. With courage, sharpness, intelligence, openness, unprejudiced mind, capacity to learn, they all come together. You start by simple exercise, and that is, always remember, whenever there is a choice, choose the unknown, the risky, the dangerous, the insecure, and you will not be at a loss. And only then, this time death can become a tremendously revealing experience and can give you the insight into your new birth. Not only insight, but even a certain choice. With awareness, you can choose a certain mother, a certain father. Ordinarily, it is all unconscious, just accidental. But a man dying with awareness is born with awareness. You can ask my mother one thing, because she happens to be here. After my birth, for 3 days, I didn't take any milk. And they were all worried. Concerned, the doctors were concerned. Is how this child is going to survive if he refuses simply to take milk. But they had no idea of my difficulty, what difficulty they were creating to me. They were trying to force in every possible way. And there was no way I could explain to them, or they couldn't find out by themselves. In my past life, before I died, I was on a fast. I wanted to complete 21 days fast. And I was murdered before my fast was going to complete, 3 days before. Those 3 days remained in my awareness, even in this birth. I had to complete my fast. I'm really stubborn. Otherwise people don't carry from one life to another life. One chapter is closed. But for 3 days they could not manage to put anything in my mouth. I simply rejected. But after 3 days I was perfectly okay, and they were all surprised that why he was refusing for 3 days and no sickness, no problem, and after 3 days he is perfectly normal. It has remained a mystery to them. But these things I don't want to talk, because to you they will be all hypothetical. And there is no way for me to prove them scientifically. And I don't want you to give any belief. So I go on cutting all that may create any belief system in your mind. You love me, you trust me, so whatever I say, you may trust it. But I insist again and again that anything that is not based on your experience, accept it only hypothetically. Don't make it your belief. If sometimes I give as an example, that is sheer necessity, because the person has asked how you manage to be so courageous and sharp in your childhood. I have not done anything. I have simply continued what I was doing in my past life. And that's why in my childhood I was thought to be crazy, eccentric. Because I will not give any explanation why I want to do it. I will simply say that I want to do it. There are reasons for me why I am doing it, but I cannot give you those reasons because you cannot understand. My father will say, I cannot understand and you can understand. I said, yes, it is something that belongs to my inner experience. It has nothing to do with your age, your being my father. You, of course, can understand much more than I can understand, but this is something that is inside me, only I can approach there, you cannot approach there. And he will simply say, you are impossible. I said, if everybody accepts this, it will be a great relief. Just accept me impossible. So I am no more a problem for you. And I have no trouble in explaining all kinds of things. I am going to do whatever I am going to do. There is no way to change it. For me, it is absolute. It is not a question of your giving me permission or not. So this was my usual practice. Whatever I wanted to do, I will do. For example, in my town, in those days before Pakistan was divided, Pakistan has destroyed many things in India. All all the snake charmers were Mohammedans. They all moved to Pakistan. India is almost empty of snake charmers. Otherwise, every day, Indian roads were simply a joy. On one corner, you see a magician doing such tremendous tricks that you will completely forget that Jesus was a man of miracles. People on the streets are doing things just for collecting perhaps 1 rupee at the most after the whole sow. And that is too much. And someplace somebody is making the snakes dance around him with his special kind of flute. I was interested in snakes. I watched many snake charmers. I was looking for somebody who can have a little compassion on a child. I followed one old man. They used to stay outside the town on the other shore of the river. The municipal committee did not allow them to stay on this side because of their snakes. They should stay on the other side of the river. So even if snakes want to come this side, they won't come. I followed him. Many times he looked back, and when we were both left alone, he said, "My son, why are you coming behind me?" I said, "I have been looking for years for you. For me?" he said. I said, "Yes, because I wanted to know what is the art of catching the snakes." But he said, "Why you waited for me? There are so many snake charmers coming and going." I said, "I wanted somebody who can have compassion on me. I cannot give you money because I cannot ask my parents that I need money to learn snake charming. That will be the end of it." He said, "That's true. But have you taken their permission?" I said, "If I take their permission, I take their permission only when I don't want to do something. Whenever I want to do something, I do it first, and then whatsoever happens, happens. When you have done it, and my answer is always, they ask why you did not ask. I said, simply because I wanted to do it, and you were not going to permit me. Now you make it difficult for me. If you give me a blank permission, there is no problem. Or if you promise me that even if I ask you such a thing, you are going to say yes, I will ask. But is snake charming? I think I told that old man, they are not going to permit me, but there is no need. You just tell me the trick. And I persuaded him. And he was a very loving man. He said, okay, one day I was also a child, and one day I also wanted to learn, and had asked somebody, and so many people refused. No, I cannot refuse you. And he told me a small trick. He said, first you start catching water snakes, because water snakes don't have poison. They look absolutely like other snakes, but they are without poison. So he said, practice with water snakes. Water snakes. I said, I know many of them, because all around the river I am familiar with their places. How to catch them? He said, the method is very simple. You have just to hold their mouth tight so they can't bring their tongue out. One thing, that they don't bring their tongue out, you hold their mouth very tight. And second thing, with the other hand, hold their backside. Because if you leave the other side, they will immediately round up around your hand. And they round up so tight that your hand opens. And once their tongue is out, then you cannot be saved. But with water snakes, there is no problem, even if their tongue is out. That's why for practice, we start with water snakes. First, hold their mouth, keep it tightly closed. Catch hold of their backside and stretch them as much as you can. So that even if sometimes you forget or you lose their grip, stretch them as much as you can so that they cannot just round around your hand, and press it so much that your hand opens. And even if your hand opens and their tongue comes out, hold with both your hands, don't let them upturn. The snake has its glands of poison upside in the mouth. And its method of biting is, first it bites by the tongue, that is just to make a wound in your body, and then it turns itself upwards. So from its gland, the poison starts flowing on your wound. He does not bite you really. His teeth are not poisonous. His teeth are just to create a wound, so blood is available to pour poison on the blood. Then the blood will take the poison around your body. So even if he opens his mouth, don't be worried. Just don't let him upturn. Hold. I tried with the river snakes. That was a great experience. They are really quick. It is not so easy. Once I learned with water snakes, I told the men, He said, now you try with my snakes, because they are trained and their poison gland has been removed. But these are real dangerous snakes. Wild, you should not start trying. First you try with the trained one. These are all show business. Their glands have been removed, so they cannot do anything. They can make all the show of biting and doing this, and that's how they used to sell the medicine. A small seed of some tree, which is rare, is found only in Himalayas, so it has value because you cannot find it anywhere. They used to sell that. Their simple method was, they will let their snake bite on themselves. In front of you, the blood will come, the snake will upturn, and nothing but saliva is pouring on your blood, and then they will put that seed, which was a porous seed, they just put it on your wound. It gets stuck and sucks the blood and the saliva that the snake has left there, and they take it out, and your hand is almost clean. There is nothing. And those seeds they were selling, they were useless seeds. There was nothing in it. With the real snake, nothing is going to work. But those snakes were just so business. So he told me that this is our business. We have nothing to do with real snakes. You don't bother with real snakes. You can play with my snakes. But once you learn, then if a chance arises, you can catch hold. And when my parents came to know, they had to come to know, because that was the whole thing that I was learning. I brought a long water snake into the class. That was the class the principal himself used to take. And he was always talking of courage and this and that. And when I came, hanging the snake on my back and holding his mouth, just close his desk, he stood on his chair. He said, keep away, keep away. Don't come close. I said, this is nothing. This is just a poisonous snake. You are not a coward man. Come down. He said, you get out of the room. I have nothing to do with you. And I promise I will not punish you. You just get out. I will never raise the question that you had brought the snake in the class. You just get out. And I remained there. And I said, what about my father? I will never... You have to promise before 30 students that I never came in this class with the snake. Say it loud. And the snake was so big that he had to say it loud that I promise that you never came in this class with any snake. I said, that's okay. I am going. But he became so freaked out that this is now too much. If this boy starts doing this kind of thing, he can bring a lion or something. How he managed? He rushed towards my father. And he told, and he said, don't say that I have told you, because he has taken promise before 30 boys who are always in his favor, because if they are not, he will create trouble for them. So the whole class as a solid unity is always behind him, whatsoever he does. That is not the matter. They are in his favor. So they will all say that he never came with any snake. I came home, my father said, anything happened today? Every day something or other happens. Life is such a joy. He said, it may be for you, but for others, you are a nuisance. I am thinking to send you to a boarding school. I said, that is a great idea. Boarding school, you mean? He said, you have some idea about boarding school? I said, that will be perfectly good, because you will not be there, family will not be there, nobody to bother, and the whole freedom. And I will continue to do the same thing that I do. I know what is troubling you. Badri Prasad Gupta was here. I smelled around. I said, I can smell. He stinks. He said, you just get lost. I don't want to talk with you. Because from the very beginning, you are prepared. I said, yes. And if you want to see the snake, it is in the bag. So with me, ahead of me, he was out of the room. But there was no training as such, just I was enjoying everything. It was such a joy to learn to catch snakes. I followed the magicians to learn their small tricks. Anything that came across, and I learned much more outside the school walls and college and university than in the university and colleges and schools themselves. So I feel really sad and sorry for all those people who think all learning is confined in those walls. The real learning is outside. What is inside the walls of schools, colleges, universities is all borrowed, bogus, with no authenticity of your own experience, no exploration. Courage will come to you. Just start. A simple formula. Never miss the unknown. Always choose the unknown. And go headlong. Even if you suffer, it is worth suffering. It is always paying. You always come out of it more grown up, more mature, more intelligent. Okay, sir.